is here today already. If you don't, this will probably be new to you. But this is the Sabbath that's designated out of the year to highlight and focus on the issue of religious liberty. And sometimes we pay close attention when that's happening, and sometimes I've got something else going on. But this time, I want to spend a little time thinking about that. So, here we go. 39 months. 39 months. How long is that? 3 1/4 years? It's long enough time for a teenager to go from being a frightened freshman to a big shot senior. It's time enough for a newborn to go from helpless to walking and talking and asking questions. And that's also how long it took from the time Todd Sturgill was fired at UPS, December 17, 2004, because he refused to violate his conscience, until his case was resolved and a final verdict rendered. During that time, Todd Sturgill had a federal agency tell him that he didn't have a case. He had UPS lawyers openly mocking him. In fact, the UPS representatives would show up to a mediation conference with an offer so embarrassingly low that their own lawyers wouldn't tell Todd's lawyers what the offer was. Did you follow that? So today, for Religious Liberty Sabbath, I'm going to tell you a little bit of the story, share with you some of the details of Todd's case. We Seventh-day Adventists believe that because God is our Maker and our King, that we must obey Him before any human authority. Amen. We see this affirmed in the Bible from the story of the fall in Genesis, when Adam and Eve got us all into this mess because they decided to obey another authority. And God let them do it. That's the fascinating part. Clear through to the New Testament, when the apostles in Acts 5:29 said, when they were threatened, we must obey God rather than men. And our belief in religious liberty touches nearly every aspect of our faith. From our insistence as Seventh-day Adventists on our right to observe rest from sundown Friday till sundown Saturday, according to the Scriptures, according to our conscience, to our understanding of the Gospel, and even the final fate of those who are unrepentant. Did that ever occur to you? That religious liberty is even connected with our understanding of death and hellfire? So unique among many Christians, although not completely unique, Seventh-day Adventists believe that God gives us freedom of choice to choose against Him, even if we wish. And our understanding of what happens to those who choose against Him is based on an understanding that God is too loving to force someone to even make the right choice. And really, that makes sense when you think about it. Because if God forces you to make the right choice, who made the choice? You didn't make the choice at all. And then this may sound extreme to you, but I think it's true. If God were to do that, He's just killed you. Even if He were to keep your body physically alive, when He reaches into your brain and starts making choices for you, you're not there anymore. And we believe in a God who is so committed to love that He would give you the freedom to walk away from Him, even to your own destruction, rather than destroy you by trying to make you do the right thing. He cannot do that. He will not do that. It doesn't accomplish any purpose to destroy you, to keep you from destroying yourself. So religious liberty, the freedom to choose to love or not love, is woven through the fabric of everything in the Scriptures, everything we believe and hold dear as Christians and as Seventh-day Adventists. And one aspect of it is the freedom to practice your religion in the workplace without being discriminated against, right? Without being fired because you want to obey God first. In this country, officially, under the law, we have the right to do that. In a lot of places in the world, not in your life. But even in this country, it doesn't always work that way. And so, let me tell you a little bit about the case of Todd Sturgill. Todd Sturgill became a Seventh-day Adventist in May of 2004. UPS, his employer, refused to give him an accommodation for his religious practice of not working from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. They fired him because he brought back an hour's worth of work on December 17, 2004. Though he had been a faithful UPS employee for 20 years. And one night, he doesn't do everything they asked him to do at his job for religious reasons, and they fired him. Todd immediately, let me back up. I'm telling some of the story a little bit out of order. On that Friday, Todd realized he wasn't going to be able to deliver all his packages in time before sunset, right, while he's out on his route. And so he called his immediate supervisor. Now, you have to understand, when he became a Seventh-day Adventist, he knew as the evenings get shorter and shorter, or the days get shorter and shorter, the evenings come sooner and sooner in the cold part of the year, he knew that he was going to be getting into conflict. In other words, the previous year, in 2003, when the Christmas season came around, a lot of packages come. UPS drivers are working till 6 or 7 at night to get all their packages finished. You know, he could see the handwriting on the wall. He knew this was going to happen. And so he gave his employers plenty of warning. Right? He asked for an accommodation well in advance of the cold season during the year when he knew that there would be a conflict between his religious beliefs and what he would be expected to do at his job. And the request went up the chain of command in UPS and came back down. Sorry, can't help you. But informally, and I'll tell you a little bit more about this process later, informally, his immediate supervisor was able to shuffle things around so that he didn't have a conflict up until December 17. And it actually came out at the trial. The supervisor testified that if he had been asked to by his supervisors, he could easily have accommodated him on that evening too. So they had been able to rearrange things so that he didn't have a conflict up until that night. But that night, the arrangements weren't made. And when UPS called his supervisor, or when Todd called his supervisor from the truck to tell him, I'm not going to be able to deliver all these packages before sundown, the supervisor said, well, you better call the plant manager. So he called the plant manager. And the plant manager fed him the company line, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do to accommodate you. What are you going to do? What would you have said? Driving your big brown truck. Todd said, I'll work as much as I can, but I'm not going to violate my conscience. And so he came back to the depot, checked out 1 minute before sundown. Somebody else took his truck and went out and made the rest of the deliveries. He went home. Came back to work on Monday, hauled him into the office, fired him. Todd immediately contacted Sam Green, the Seventh-day Adventist Public Affairs and Religious Liberty Director for his region. This church actually appoints people to look out for you when you get into this kind of situation. And what's fascinating to me is they don't just look out for Seventh-day Adventists. I read another case recently about a Mormon lady who was, all her commissions were withheld from her sales job, and finally she was fired. And she had reason to believe. She got a memo, you know, overheard, or got her hands on a memo or an email that basically said it was because she was a Mormon. And the Seventh-day Adventist Religious Liberty team took up her case and nailed the people. So he contacted Sam Green. Green helped Todd through the required UPS administrative process, which just told him, you have no case. Green then referred Todd's case to the Seventh-day Adventist Religious Liberty Committee. This is a group of people who decide where to put the resources to fight different cases like this. And they decided that Todd's case was worth fighting. When the case started, UPS was openly confident, and with good reason. It wasn't clear at what point and how UPS could have let Todd Sturgill off during its busiest time of the year without incurring what the courts call undue hardship. Right? The way religious liberty law is set up in our country, your employer is required to make accommodation for you as long as it doesn't cost them a lot of money. But how much a lot of money is very vague. In fact, the way the precedents have been set in court, a lot of money might turn out to be a nickel. They don't have to show that it's going to cause them a lot of trouble to accommodate you to be protected legally from any sanctions against them if they discriminate against you. And Charles Kester, the attorney who ultimately handled Todd's case, knew that because of one particular precedent set in 1977 in a Supreme Court case, UPS just had to show what's called a de minimis or minimal cost increase or decrease in efficiency to make their case. They just had to show a minimum of disruption to their process, a minimum of expense would be involved in order to win. So Kester started out like any good lawyer will. He checked out UPS's story. And it's really fascinating what he began to find out. UPS claimed at every turn, everybody he talked to, that it would cost them money to accommodate Todd. But when he asked how much, no one could tell him. In fact, through the entire process, right, because this case was getting ready to go to trial, there was a trial, there was an appeal, through the entire process, no UPS official ever gave a single figure of how much it would cost them to accommodate Todd. Well, Kester was feeling a little bit more encouraged. In addition, everyone agreed that what Todd was asking for, to have packages given to another employee a few days during the year, right, during the shorter days of the year, we're talking November, December, part of January, and so on. Probably it was mostly an issue right during the Christmas crunch in December. That was done on a non-religious basis routinely. UPS doesn't have set routes for their drivers. They have kind of a looping system where if they're tracking all the packages as they come into the plant, if somebody ends up with too many packages on their truck, they can actually punch some buttons and swap things around to balance out the loads. And this happens every day in every UPS facility, every time they're loading up the trucks. So if somebody had a birthday party to go to, or needed some personal time off, it was a routine thing that the supervisor would shuffle their load a little bit, give a few more packages to somebody else, and take away a few from them so they could get off earlier, or even take a whole day off. For non-religious reasons, this happened all the time. Furthermore, it came out at trial that there were at least three employees who were less senior than Todd. Now, you understand this is a big union operation. My brother used to work for UPS, and you had to join the union, and there was all these seniority issues. And one of the things Todd was working on at this time, because he knew there'd be a conflict, was he offered to transfer to, I don't know if you'd call it a desk job, but some other kind of work where the employees don't deliver. You know, they're not working into the evening. And UPS was happy to accommodate that. They were willing to give him the job. But you know what got in the way? He couldn't transfer to that other job because of the union rules. Because you had to have seniority, you know, in that location and so on in order to get into the job. And so he was waiting until January or February or, you know, sometime later down the line to even be able to take that opportunity. Right? So now he's working through the Christmas crunch in December, even though he's made all the arrangements he could make, and union rules have prevented him from taking a different job. Anyway, so on this evening, right, December 17, 2004, two less senior employees got off work earlier than he did. And one less senior employee had the entire day off. UPS couldn't explain how that happened. Testimony also came out of the trial showing that had they given part of Todd's work, you know, that hour's worth of work to the other drivers, there were so many drivers on the road that night, so many packages out there, it would have averaged out to less than a third of a package per driver if they had shared his stuff out with other people. Despite this, UPS kept insisting that it couldn't have accommodated Todd. Well, the trial started on a Monday afternoon and ended on Thursday morning. The jury came back saying that UPS had unlawfully failed to accommodate Todd Sturgill. They gave Todd all the money he asked for in back pay, and then they gave him twice the amount of money that they'd owed in back pay in punitive damages. In other words, they said, you guys really messed up, and we want it to cost you. Later on, the judge ordered that he should also have his job back. I don't know if I'd want to go back to work in that situation myself. But, you know, he'd worked there 20 years. He had seniority. He had benefits. He had, you know, it's not just a matter of the money that he lost by not working there. But UPS appealed. Right? That's their right. That's where the 39 months come from. Right? So we've taken a year and a half to get to this point, and nearly another year and a half to get through the appeal process. Meanwhile, Todd's not working. On appeal, they changed their tune. At the trial, they kept insisting that they couldn't reasonably be expected to accommodate Todd because every Friday, we're going to have to make special arrangements for him so he can leave. It's too big a deal. It's going to cost us lots of money. This was the line they kept repeating. But on the appeal, they swapped it around. Because, see, what had happened was, as those shorter days came along, Todd's immediate supervisor had been swapping the loads around, like he did for people informally all the time, so they could go to a birthday party or some family event. He'd been swapping the loads around so Todd could get off early. And so even though he had officially gone against the company policy, because they told Todd, we can't accommodate you, he was doing it kind of behind the company's back. Now they jumped all over that and said, but we did accommodate him. See? The 5 weeks before that, we'd accommodated him. So, it's reasonable for him to work one Sabbath out of 10. Now, am I the only one that's bothered by that logic? See, for a person of faith, partial accommodation is no accommodation. It didn't matter whether they told Todd he had to work Sabbath 52 weeks out of the year or 1 week out of the year because he wasn't going to do either one. The appeals court rendered what some would call a mixed decision for Todd. The first good news is he got his job back. The second good news is the court allowed for his legal expenses. Although UPS tried to tell the court that they shouldn't pay them all, there were actually kind of two branches to Todd's case, you know, two directions that they took to try to win the case. And the court held in Todd's favor for one of them, and they kind of said, well, but we don't buy the other one. UPS actually tried to say, we shouldn't have to pay the legal portion of the legal fees for the part he didn't win. fortunately, the court said baloney. He won, you were wrong, you pay his fees. He got his back pay. But the appeals court took away the punitive damages. They said because UPS followed their own procedure, right? The request went up the line and they, you know, checked it out and decided they couldn't accommodate him, that it wasn't malicious. That they weren't deliberately saying, we don't like Adventists, let's get this guy. And so they said, punitive damages are not appropriate. But he got his job back, he got his back pay, they paid his legal fees. But there's one other aspect of it that some find disturbing. And that was the court's ruling on what is a reasonable accommodation. Right? UPS was saying, we made a reasonable accommodation. 9 times accommodating him out of 10. Isn't that good enough? We tried. And of course, Todd said, no, 9 times out of 10 is still no accommodation at all. The court decided they were going to take kind of a middle ground. And they said, well, it's kind of up to the jury in every case. In some cases, 9 times out of 10 might be fine. Depends on the specifics. In other cases, 9 times out of 10 isn't good enough. The good news is, in Todd's case, they said 9 times out of 10 is not good enough. You should have accommodated him. You could have accommodated him. You failed to make a case that it would cost you lots of money or be a hassle. You will accommodate him in the future and give him his job back. The bad news is, it leaves up to juries now to look into your life and second guess whether you should be accommodated for your faith. Based on their interpretation, yeah, of your religion. It leaves religious minorities on kind of shaky ground. It's not the ideal legal precedent that we would like to have been set. Now, I realize it is kind of tricky. And in fact, there exists a religious liberty committee that decides which cases to take on because there are people who want to file a grievance that they've been discriminated against when they were happy to work 9 out of 10 before. And so I can understand the court wanting to be careful that they don't set too strong of a precedent because some people really would have a hard time making their case that they should be accommodated because they aren't very serious about their faith to begin with. But it's still not the ideal precedent. I heard the story, I don't know, most of you know Dale Way, not all of you perhaps, one of the members over in Surprise Valley, worked for the Postal Service for I don't know how many years, worked there until he retired. 35, I think. Yeah, something like that. And when he began working for the Postal Service, even though he'd grown up a Seventh-day Adventist, he wasn't attending church, he wasn't practicing his faith, he was working Sabbaths. And then he got convicted, had a child, started going back to church, and he realized, I shouldn't be doing this, I don't want to be doing this. And he went to his boss and told him, I need an accommodation. And the boss said, sorry, you can't have it. And Dale had read a story in a magazine recently about someone in a very similar position who had become a Seventh-day Adventist and only had 2 more weeks to work Sabbaths before he retired from the Postal Service. So he decided, well, it's only 2 more weeks, and he worked them. The last week he was killed on the job. And Dale said to himself, I ain't going to do that. So he told his boss, well, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to be here this coming Saturday. And he just didn't show up. He came back to work Monday not knowing if he had a job. They sent him out. This went on for 3 months, not knowing if he had a job every time he came back to work on Monday. And after 3 months of watching him, the boss figured out, okay, he's serious about this. And they offered him a job in another part of the facility where he wouldn't have a Sabbath conflict. He worked Sunday through Thursday for the rest of his 25 years. And the supervisor who had made that accommodation Eventually, I had come down here to Redding and was the supervisor for all of the Northern California area. And when Dale retired, at the end of his stint, the supervisor came up to his retirement. Made quite an impression on him. I'm proud to be part of a group of people who will fight for the rights of not only Seventh-day Adventists, not only people who believe what we believe, but of all people to practice their faith according to their conscience without discrimination in the workplace. And most of us are probably not directly involved with this from day to day. But you know, it's hard to get a job anywhere as a Seventh-day Adventist without encountering some part of this issue. Makes it nice to be in business for yourself, right? Makes it nice to work for yourself. One way that you and I can help is by urging our representatives to support a bill called the Workplace Religious Freedom Act. I think you've probably all heard about that. Maybe not everyone. The Workplace Religious Freedom Act is designed to put religious rights on a par with other civil rights. Like if you were disabled and your employer refused to accommodate you by, you know, making a ramp so you could get in with your wheelchair and other things, how far do you think you'd get with, oh, but it's going to be too expensive? Or how far do you think your employer would get with that kind of reasoning? In today's climate, probably not very far. But if it's a religious issue, it just has to cost them a little bit. And then they don't have to accommodate you. Why should that be? So you can urge your representatives to support the Workplace Religious Freedom Act. It would make it clear that protecting someone's religious rights means all the time, and not just 9 times out of 10. It would make it clear that a reasonable accommodation doesn't mean if it just costs you a nickel, but that you should go somewhat out of your way to make it work for people of faith. It is good to live in a country where people like Todd Sturgill have the ability and the right to fight for their rights, to be vindicated in a court of law. It'd be better if we lived in a country where people did the right thing, companies did the right thing in the first place, and didn't drag someone through 39 months of court proceedings in order to do what they should have done in the first place.